It really does take a leader setting the tone for, hey, here on our team, we're going to own our strengths. We're going to we're responsible for showing up every day and bringing the very best that we've got to the table, whether we're strong in relationship building or influencing people or thinking strategically or, you know, executing tasks. Like, we're responsible for bringing these things to the table. But on our team, you know what else is true? We also own and are comfortable with our weaknesses.
I'm Jeff Lackey, host of your show, Growing Your Business with People. I am thrilled to have Leanne Lagasse. She is an HR consultant and keynote speaker who helps leaders and organizations improve their employee engagement and retention and develop people managers. She is Clifton Strengths certified coach and also serves as adjunct faculty at Missouri State University, where she teaches professional communications and courses to MBA students. Prior to launching her consulting business, she was a faculty member and the director of public speaking in the College of Media and Communications at Texas Tech University, where she served for over 14 years. Alongside her husband, Ben, she's a proud mom to three children and, get this, everybody, two pet prairie dogs. When I saw that, I just lost it. I thought, I don't know anybody else who owns pet prairie dogs. So we're going to have to learn more about that as well. We're talking. Welcome, Leanne. Thanks for coming to the show.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. And hopefully I can share a little bit more about the prairie dog life that I live later.
Well, y'all are going to get a kick out of this, because one of the things we're going to cover in the course of our conversation is the fact that about 15 minutes or so before the session, I ran across the Harvard Business Review article, and it talks about versatility in a volatile world. And on the cover of this thing, I don't know if y'all can see, now this dog here looks like a prairie dog standing on top of somebody's shoes in a prairie dog position. Now, it's not technically a prairie dog, but I was sitting there going, so like, I'm prepping for this show, reading about somebody who owns two prairie dogs. I'm reading a Harvard Business Review article about prairie dogs. And I'm like, this is just too much coincidence to be real. So we're definitely going to have to get into that. But before we do, I'd love to give you an opportunity, Leanne, to tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and especially as it relates to your consulting with leaders and how to develop their people managers.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks so much for having me. And I do have to say, I feel like maybe that this Harvard Business Review is a sign that maybe you also need to adopt some prairie dogs. But okay. So, let me share just a little bit about my background. So I know, right? They're such great pets. So I went to, college at Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas. And I studied communication. My entire life, I've been fascinated with human communication and really the science of people. And so I knew when I went to graduate school that I wanted to keep studying people and communication. And I really did think that I was going to go into consulting and training, but I had sort of the idea that I would probably go work for, you know, somebody else, and had no idea that one day I would own my own, you know, independent consulting business. But then what happened was, you know, when I was in graduate school, I was, as many graduate students are, I was, you know, wanting to get kind of a break on my fees and my tuition. And so I agreed to be a graduate teaching assistant at the time it was called Business and Professional Communication course. And so I found myself suddenly standing in front of, you know, two groups of 25 students who were taking, by the way, one of the most anxiety provoking courses that someone can take in a college campus. And I just fell in love with it. I just felt like I am in my sweet spot. I was born to do this. I'm getting to work with people. I'm so passionate about people. I'm getting to equip and educate and then hopefully, you know, empower these students with these skills that they're going to be able to use in their professional lives and their personal lives and their, you know, civic or public lives. And I just loved it. I was living my best life, so to speak, as an instructor. And then when I graduated with my master's degree, I stuck around. I just loved teaching so much that I thought, no, I'm going to make a go of this. I don't want to do anything else, you know? And so I stuck around. And the part of my story that I think really resonates with a lot of the leaders that I work with today and the people managers I work with today is that like many, including probably many of you listening, you know, to this podcast, is you were probably, you know, a talented and competent individual contributor. And because of that, you get promoted to, you know, a leader, or you're managing people, you're suddenly responsible for the outcomes of others. And as you figure out pretty quickly and often painfully, the skills that it took to get you there are not the same skills that it takes to be successful in, you know, people leadership roles. And so, you know, I look back on that season of my life and I think, you know, I was highly motivated. I was the high capacity, you know, I had really strong work ethic. I wanted to be so great. But it was such a struggle and a grind. There were tears along the way. I learned a lot of lessons, you know, the hard way. But what happened was I started thinking, okay, well, how can I lean into what comes naturally to me, the strengths that I have, to really equip me to be much more successful and get to these outcomes that I need with my people? At the time I was leading, I had about 20 direct reports, which that's too many in my opinion, but I had about 20 direct reports and it was quite a challenge. When I figured out, okay, I can take sort of my educational background in communication and strategic communication, right? And crafting messages to drive employee engagement and develop the talent that I had and, you know, train and equip and manage. That's when I started to hit my stride. And so I worked in that role for quite a while. As you mentioned, I was at Texas Tech for 14 years. And the bulk of that, I was in this, you know, high level kind of strategic and administrative role. I had over 1,400 students a semester who were taking public speaking under my care. But again, that was the easy part. The hard part was the managing the people part. And anyway, all that said, what happened was I kind of came full circle. And in 2017, I launched what I thought would be sort of a side gig, kind of side hustle thing, doing a consulting and training just sort of in my local area here in West Texas. And I did that alongside a colleague, and together for about 4 years, we worked with businesses and organizations really in the area of talent development. And so equipping organizations to provide training and equipping to their staff. And then in late 2021, I launched it on my own. And so now I'm an independent consultant. And yeah, as you said, I get to work with leaders and organizations around engagement, retention, and equipping their people managers to drive engagement and retention. So that's a little bit about me.
That is awesome. Wow. That one of the things that is always surprising to me is that, and it shouldn't be, is that people who achieve great things and achieve so many things in their lives often could never have imagined all the experiences they had whenever they started out, you know, and they've really grown into them over time. And they find it's more an accumulation of all their experiences that get them to where they go. Then a good dose of humility, which life gives us along the way, right? So,
oh boy, does it. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Paradox AI, also known as Olivia, recruiting's most advanced AI assistant. I use Paradox at my previous organization, and their team helped us create a candidate concierge experience that ensured a fast hiring process that still felt very human. We literally hired hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom were critical healthcare workers needed during the pandemic. She would let them know we had an interview or offer waiting and would help them navigate onboarding processes. Olivia made the experience easy and fast, two essential ingredients in recruiting great people. It's not just me. Organizations like McDonald's, General Motors, Unilever, and L'Oreal use this technology to create engaging and fast candidate experiences. Go to paradox.ai to learn more about the amazing things Paradox and Olivia can do for you. Well, let's talk a little bit about one of the things that is a passion for you. You're a Gallup certified Clifton Strengths coach, right? And so one of the areas that's really important to you is how do you play to your team strengths and to individual strengths? And how do you go about growing your teams by understanding what their strengths are. So before we started, I've taken the strengths finder. I'm not, you know, I don't need to share all my strengths. One of which is Activator, which we laughed because that's why I sent Leanne the article about Harvard Business Review literally 6 minutes before this, the taping of this episode, which I'm sure she read the thing cover to cover and has digested all aspects of it by now. So that's one of my traits. And as you look through your traits, if you've done StrengthsFinder in the past, you'll understand that it's a very good reflection of who you are. But I guess for your perspective, how do you play to your team's strengths and how do you grow your teams by understanding what those strengths are?
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you bringing up this tool because it really is core and sort of central to so much of the work that I do. This particular tool was transformative for me personally. I took this assessment for the very first time when I was 18 years old. I was a freshman at Texas Tech, and I remember having a professor, you know, walk me through how these talents showed up in my life and help me sort of explore those things. And it was just revolutionary mindset shift for me because I was a high achiever. I really wanted to you know, be successful, but sort of the flip side of that is that you kind of start to then feel a lot of shame and a lot of guilt about the areas where maybe you don't bring a lot of natural talent, you know? So for example, for me personally, you know, I was always the most organized, the most structured. I thrive in predictability and structure. And when I can improve efficiency for my team and I can, you know, put systems and structures in place, that's kind of my sweet spot. So because of that, I have always struggled more with, for example, thinking very creatively or very out of the box or innovatively because I'm so much more prone to systems and structures that lead to efficiency and streamlining. And so I had this faculty member who walked through this process with me and, you know, it was just groundbreaking. So I was always sort of a Clifton, now it's been rebranded. It's called Clifton Strengths now, but historically it's been called Strengths Finder, right? But so I was such a geek and an evangelist, if you will, for this tool because it just had been so helpful. So when I mentioned earlier when I started working with my team and how that was just such a difficult time. Thankfully, Texas Tech was one of the first strengths-based universities in the country. And so they were really very passionate about also equipping students. So every student, for example, had a code to take the assessment. So I started using it with my team. And Jeff, I mean, I'm serious. Immediately felt a difference, just even team cohesion and productivity, because suddenly I had eyes to see from the very beginning. Like if I had a graduate teaching assistant show up on day one, you know, I didn't understand their personality yet. I hadn't seen them teach in a classroom yet to really dig in. But what I knew was, hey, this is a research-based tool. Again, it's rooted in over five decades of quantitative and qualitative research. This is a research-based tool that can help me not put my people in a box because actually I get real snooty about that. I can't stand when organizations use assessments in a way that is sort of to label. I see it as it's an on-ramp for more curiosity and more exploration for what makes your people thrive and flourish, where they're going to bring the most value, where they're going to struggle a little bit, and how you can use what you know about their talent and strength to help them manage around those weaknesses. You know, so one of the most common misconceptions, I think, when people hear about, oh, a strengths-based approach is they almost sometimes they'll say things to me like, well, isn't that just sort of participation trophy culture? Like we're all fantastic and we're not going to address weaknesses. And that just drives me bonkers because it's just not accurate. A real strengths-based approach. And when organizations use this tool well, what we're saying is, hey, I want to understand how you thrive and flourish. And in these areas where we need to improve your performance or get to an improved performance outcome, the trick is not just, you know, you pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. It's figuring out how to use what you have that comes naturally to get to those positive outcomes. So for leaders that I work with, the strengths-based approach is really, it's a tool. It's a mindset shift. It's a tool that leaders can use to, for example, grow in their performance management practices with individuals. It helps them get concrete language around praise and recognition that they can deliver, which again, praise and recognition, when that increases, right, all sorts of positive business outcomes happen for leaders. It also provides opportunities for leaders to coach their team members more effectively. And so coaching is another area where I do a lot of work. So it gives them really good handles. It also just, it allows leaders to get more strategic about the ways that they, plan and the ways that they align roles to people in light of talent. And again, not to put people in boxes, but to say, how do we get everybody operating in a place where they love their role? Because if they love their role, then, and they feel like they get to use their strengths in their role, they're much more likely to love working for this organization. And again, that leads to all sorts of positive outcomes for us, including improved financial performance. Yeah.
Well, that's a big deal.
I could talk for another hour about this because it's just one of my very favorite tools to use. Yeah.
Well, that's obvious. And I can completely understand. So I want to give an example personally where I'd use this. So I've been familiar with Clifton StrengthsFinder for well over probably a decade and a half. Oh, I don't know. Well over a decade, two decades. I give up on how long things are. Everything seems closer than it actually was, right?
Right.
But in a couple of cases, what I was looking for is looking for complementary strengths, right? Looking for people on my first line to say, how do they complement me? How do they complement each other? But also understanding that complementary strengths might mean conflict in some cases, because people may not be communicating in the same language. They may not value the same, like you said, praise and what have you. In one case, it was really, really useful. So a person, Bethany Gillen, who's on my team in CVS, she's part of the, she had started out with an Aetna organization, and she was within the team. She was leading college relations and university recruitment. So if you can't tell, although I have learned how to become a very organized and detail-oriented person, that may not be my natural strength, right? Mm-hmm. So I am a little bit more on the creative side, right? Every time she'd come up to come to the meeting, she says, Jeff, I have my lists. I have all my lists. I have everything that we have to go over. She was the yin to my yang, right? She was completely opposite. Now, at first, what that created was something where she felt very like self-conscious about the relationship. Like she didn't feel like she was communicating on a wavelength that I could get or that necessarily I appreciated. And I tried to slow it down, and I said, listen, it's not about that. It's about the fact that you just are very different from me. And I love that about you, and I appreciate that about you. But it's going to take a little bit more time for us to meld together as a team because we are so different. But let's look for the places where we were common. Let's look for the things that we did have a couple things in common that were on the StrengthsFinder as well as other attributes. And what we realized is that actually in the end of the day, more things were in common than were different. But that we could actually work together, and by the time that we were finished working together, we were very close. We had a very tight-knit relationship that allowed us to be very successful and work transformatively together, because we appreciated not only each other's strengths, but we weren't afraid to have the other person know what our weaknesses were, because inherently, not everything is a strength.
Absolutely. And I think I would say, a couple of things in response to the story that you shared. One, it really does take a leader setting the tone for, hey, here on our team, we're going to own our strengths. We're going to we're responsible for showing up every day and bringing the very best that we've got to the table, whether we're strong in relationship building or influencing people or thinking strategically or, executing tasks. Like, we're responsible for bringing these things to the table. But on our team, what else is true? We also own and are comfortable with our weaknesses. Now, what we're not talking about is, using that as a crutch to say, for example, well, I'm sorry, but this thing you have asked me to do does not align with my strengths, right? I definitely don't recommend that as a strategy. And mm-hmm. nor is it okay, I think, to say, well, I'm just a jerk because, you know, I'm high in this particular strength. I mean, that's not what the strengths-based approach is, right? But it's to say, hey, on our team, we own our weaknesses. We're comfortable saying, so for me to say, hey, when a task requires innovation and creativity, that's me a little bit feeling like I'm trying to write with my non-dominant hand. I can maybe get mm-hmm. to the outcome, but it's harder. It's not as enjoyable. It's not me at my very best. However, mm-hmm. somebody in this group in our team who brings, you know, creativity and innovation to the table, guess what? I am, to your point, Jeff, a phenomenal partner to then implement the heck out of that. And say, right. let's figure out the processes, procedures to make that happen. So what happens when leaders, I think, set the tone for that is it lets everybody kind of breathe a sigh of relief that, okay, I'm good to bring what I do very best every day to work. And where there is vulnerability and weakness, again, we've still got to get to a good outcome. We still have to work together, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to use what I do have to get there. And I will tell you, it's transformative for the leaders I work with. For example, I just wrapped up a 4-month coaching and development program for a group of 34 people managers. Most of them are pretty brand new, or, you know, just maybe 1 or 2 years into that. And what they all said to me, as a result of this program, that was the most transformative. And I taught them new content about driving engagement and retention and all these very important things that they need to know as people leaders. But what the resounding, you know, feedback that I get about the most meaningful piece of it is, I feel like I know who I am as a leader, and I also know who I'm not. But I have a strategy now about how to manage around those areas that I'm not. One of the exercises I had them walk through was I made them actually pretend as though, because I think there's a part of development that is often overlooked is like low stakes experimentation and practice, almost like, I don't know, a college classroom or something like that, right? So I put my professor hat on and I say, let's pretend that you have a new direct report and you're going to be introducing yourself to them in a more meaningful way than probably you've had a lot of time to do in your interview process or whatnot. And you're going to tell them, hey, this is what it's like to work with me as a leader, right? Here's where I show up and bring my very best. These are areas where maybe I struggle a little bit more as a leader. This is where I really have to lean on those on my team. Can you imagine what kind of impact that has on people? So I had these leaders all actually go through and kind of pretend like they were writing, you know, write almost not a script, but kind of here's the message I would want to communicate. And you're saying to these people, this is who I am. Sometimes in the past, because I'm, for example, if I'm you, Jeff, I might say, you know, because I'm so energized by launching something and the newness mm-hmm. is exciting to me and I want to just get started. Sometimes in the past, others have perceived me as being too impulsive or, you know, I can, if I'm not careful, I move too quickly. And so what you're doing then is you're really positioning your entire team to know it's okay to talk about our strengths and our weaknesses on the team. And it also, I think, allows for so much grace to flow between team members, because suddenly I can go, like, if Jeff's my boss and Jeff is, you know, he's doing that activator thing again, like he's moving. I have so much more, I can assume positive intent. You know, hopefully, because I know, oh, that's actually him at his very best. Now, as it turns out, Jeff needs some of us to sometimes slow him down a little bit and maybe do some risk mm-hmm. assessment. But that's him at his very best. So it really does, you know, I love that story that you shared because I think it's your disclosure is what sets the tone for all of those positive outcomes, you know, that happened for that relationship. So I absolutely love that. Pumps me up.
So right there, you guys got a nugget. So go back, play the tape, rewind, go back to that and say, assume positive intent. You will have heard it during the interview with Paul Nouveau. He talked about it, from BPAS. Several of our other guests have talked about it. Leanne says, okay, if you have a tool that helps you understand where the person's coming from, you can understand not only where they're coming from, but you can understand why they got, how and why they got there. right? So part of assuming that positive intent is, you know, you can operate off of blind faith, and that's good. That's better than nothing, right? To say, well, I'm just assuming that they have a positive intent. I have no idea what that intent was, but that's not the best, but it's better than assuming negative intent. The step better would be actually thinking through and having some basis to be able to formulate it. Oh, his strength is activator. That means that he wants to go as soon as he has 60% of the data. He's not an 80-20 person. He's a 60-40 person, right? Glass half full. Nah, glasses are 3/4 full all the time, right? Let's go. Let's figure it out. Let's learn the lessons. I get it. That's not surprising. And this is where I can help. I may be able to either throttle back and say, hey, here's some things that might be derailers. Or I might be able to say, here's some ways that we can accelerate, but there are things that you need to do before we get started, right? That will accelerate our path. And I've always appreciated, I always tell some members of my team, I said, I usually have one person whose job is 100% to keep me out of jail. Your job, part of your role, is to keep me from going to jail. I said, I promise not to do anything illegal or unethical intentionally, but your job is to keep me from going to jail otherwise. And they always laugh. But usually one person in the group inevitably actually takes that mantle on willingly and says, actually, that's my strength. That's something I'm good at. Like, I'm good at following the rules, knowing what the rules are, knowing how to interpret them, knowing what the line is that you can't cross, knowing how to get close to the line, but not crossing it, right? And working with you on that.
What if you could have an up-to-the-minute dashboard that showed you exactly how to improve candidate experience from first career site visit to fully onboarded new hire? With Surveil, you can.
This podcast is brought to you by Surveil's Candidate Experience Management Platform. In my role at CVS, I used Surveil, and it showed my team unprecedented insights into how our people, processes, and technology were positively and negatively affecting candidate experience. It gave us a roadmap for delighting candidates, boosting employer brand, and improving hiring outcomes.
Visit Surveil.com today for more information. And while you're there, download our free white paper, The Data-Driven Candidate Experience Maturity Model. Check out top HR product winner Surveil and download your free white paper at surveil.com.
Hello, listeners. As a senior business leader, you're probably struggling with scaling infrastructure like succession, engagement of people, retention, hiring, and even change management. FutureSolve is an HR advisory firm founded with some of the most well-known CHROs in the country. We specialize in helping medium-sized companies and small businesses with their HR strategy. We do this using a blended service of strategy and innovative AI technologies to make an impact on the bottom line.
One of the things that we talk a lot about on the show is the intersection of people and profit. But I noticed that your specialties are really around communication, engagement, and leadership, and really getting to develop people managers. So my question is, how does communication engagement relate to the intersection of people and profit? And what are some of your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, Jeff, it's such a good question. And one that actually, interestingly, I feel like I've had to answer less and less really since even the pandemic began, because I think prior to that, one, you didn't hear as often, you know, people really dialing into employee engagement and employee experience the way that I think so many more organizations are doing now, right? So there's a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, even pre-pandemic, we know that engagement is linked to, again, all sorts of other positive business outcomes. So your engagement levels go up, your turnover goes down, right? There's your money. That's a lot of money, you know, and that's a major pain point for organizations right now. When you think about, you know, there's a new term every week. It's like the great reset, the great reshuffle, the great resignation, it's quiet quitting. It's all sorts of things, right? But engagement is tied to lower turnover. It's tied to better financial performance. It's tied to higher productivity, less absenteeism, right? It's tied to actually fewer safety incidents in organizations where, you know, that is a major thing you're tracking. The higher your employee engagement, this is not a shocker. Your higher your customer service scores tend to be, right? Or customer client engagement. So again, and I could keep going, there's so many positive things that happen when organizations invest in employee engagement. And, you know, just to define employee engagement, it would really be, you know, for someone to be highly engaged in their work, it means that they have to feel committed to, involved in, enthusiastic about both their role, yes, their actual role. And that's where the strengths piece comes in, is I feel like I'm in a great role for who I am. But then also, hey, I really enjoy working for this organization. So it's kind of two different parts. It's here's how I feel about the role that I'm in. And also here's how I feel about the organization. Because as you know, you could have someone who feels like, I actually really like this role that I have, and I feel like it's a good fit, but I'm not super a fan of where I work. Or you can have somebody who says, oh, I really actually love the culture here. I love working here. I really love the people, relationships, but I just, every day feels like a grind, or it feels like it's not connecting with who I am. So you really need both of those things. Engagement leads to all sorts of positive financial, you know, outcomes for organizations. In my experience, you know, organizations that come to, for example, work with me around assessing employee engagement and building employee engagement strategy are often in two camps. There's camp number one, and these are organizations that are kind of, they want to go from good to great. They already have a lot of, you know, great things in place. They're not experiencing just, you know, terrible turnover. They've got pretty good culture, but they really want to build something phenomenal, right? So they're working to improve it. And then the other camp that sometimes, you know, will kind of land on my doorstep is those that are really struggling. And maybe their turnover is off the charts. Maybe they're, you know, losing leaders, managers, middle-level managers, for example. Burnout is off the charts for them right now because they're, you know, being squeezed from both directions as they always have. But so those organizations come to me and they're saying, we see the value. Like, we have got to stop the bleeding when it comes to our people operations, our people function, because absolutely we see the connection to our financial performance. So, I think it is less, it's less often that it's less often now that I have to really build the ROI, for this, you know, for organizations to see how valuable it is. Cause I think everybody, especially over the last few years, has really seen, oh no, it really matters to our financial performance.
That's terrific. So one of the things that I would love to go inside your head and like see through your eyes, maybe an example of where you saw a leader or an organization really get this right. Like set the stage for us. Describe what we were going into, what type of show you had to go into, and then how that evolved into something that that was hopefully a great example of what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I wish we need like another 3 hours for me. I would love to just share stories about how, you know, organizations have made some strategic decisions about their employee experience engagement and how it's led to all sorts of positive things for them. I think, you know, maybe one that I would love to share, because it touches on a lot of the things we've already talked about, is one of my clients is actually the YWCA. So they're in my area, they employ a lot of people, and many of them are part-time employees, right? So, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of employees. In my area, the YWCA is very, very robust. And so they were, through COVID, through the pandemic, was very challenging for them, as it was for so, so many. And on the heels of that, they were sort of in a place where, yeah, leaders are going, what can we do to both empower the people that we have and to improve, you know, the culture, but also to attract, you know, new candidates. How do we attract a college student to work here versus anywhere else they can work? And now, you know, they can make money online if they want to as well. So how do we attract them? And so what I did is I was able to go in and work with them over really about a 7-8 month period of time to assess their, you know, current state. We conducted, you know, some employee engagement surveys to kind of get a baseline of what their employees were thinking or feeling. And then what we did is we strategically developed a core group of both the executive team and the your director level manager team. So it was a group of about 20 leaders. And so I worked with those leaders over the course of, you know, 6 or 7 months, equipping them with a lot of the, you know, the science of employee engagement and retention and how to build team cohesion, how to use communication rhythms to drive engagement. So they were receiving a lot of learning and development. But then in addition to that, I also spent a lot more focused time with three of their kind of people team. So their HR director and a couple of their people team. And I met with them more in a coaching, you know, relationship to equip them with the tools that they needed to execute this on a day-to-day basis. Because I think that's what a lot of people get nervous about with a consultant is, and rightfully so, is we don't want to get to a place where we have to have this person in the building for this thing to run. I mean, that's a nightmare for me. Right. That keeps me up at night, right? So that's not, and that's not a good business strategy either. That's so right. I'm working very closely with them and training them for, in this case in particular, we identified gap areas for them where Clifton Strengths really would be very impactful to close the gap. So what is just, it geeks me out. It makes me so proud of them is after that engagement, after all that coaching and equipping and training, now they are running their own internal processes, have built in rhythms for praise and recognition, for talent acquisition to capture more of that local college talent, high school talent, right? To fill all of these hundreds of positions that they, teacher positions that they have. Wow. So they're using that tool across the employee life cycle. And since they've done that, since they've implemented that, last time I saw one of the leaders, She said, oh my goodness, like you can just feel the difference in the building. I mean, our turnover is going down. Our employees are feeling more invested, you know, feeling that we're investing in them more. They're starting to be able to benchmark and see positive changes happen in some of those metrics that we're tracking. So it is a process that if you really will invest in it, you just can't even believe the change that will happen, both in terms of the metrics you're tracking for your business, but also in the felt everyday experiences of the people that walk in and out of your building or hop on a Zoom call. It's so, so important and powerful. And I'm just like, cannot believe that I get to be a part of it for these organizations.
Wow. You couldn't have given a better example. So what I would tell folks, like if you hear your team talk about employment brand, I'd say forget about what you're publicizing externally for a moment. Employee engagement is the internal reflection of what your real employment brand is. If you understand what engagement drivers are and are not, where your misses are as well as where your hits are, right? You understand then what your employment brand is, and then you can take that, you can build upon it, get better. But you can also then use that to attract talent into your organization because they can clearly understand what type of environment and culture they're about to enter into. And they're more likely to be more satisfied. They're more likely to stick around. They're more likely to be successful, get promoted. And they're more likely to refer others into the organization, creating exactly what you're talking about, that virtuous cycle of, and what do I always say? The number one best recruiting strategy ever devised is to stop losing people, reduce your attrition, right? You know, after you're done with that, then you can worry about hiring more, right? But your number one thought or an understanding is to say, Why do people leave? Why do they stay? And why do they love what they do? And then really try to build an organization, continue to grow an organization around that. Excellent, excellent discussions. This podcast is brought to you by 7-Step, a leading global workforce solutions provider that offers recruitment process outsourcing, MSP services to manage the flexible workforce, including suppliers and contractors, and total talent solutions for managing the entire permanent and flexible workforce supply. Their people are great, and so is their technology, particularly their Surveyo Insights data and intelligence platform. It's really cutting edge, not only in how it brings your talent data together, but in how it draws deep, detailed, predictive intelligence. It's really like a crystal ball for your talent data. I used 7-Step at my previous two organizations, and their team helped us to launch a full-service RPO to staff healthcare workers, customer service reps, IT professionals, data science and engineering, digital design teams, along with aerospace engineers and manufacturing workers. Their talent analytics put data at my fingertips, which allowed me to see around corners and strategically plan for frequent and volatile market changes, including a global pandemic where we had to hire literally hundreds of thousands of people. Their deep knowledge and exceptional integrity allowed me to rely on them as a trusted partner across multiple lines of business. Go to 7steprpo.com to learn more about the powerful things 7-Step can do for you. Let's talk for just a moment about a new Harvard Business Review article talking about leadership versatility. According to a new piece this week, there's a conversation around truly versatile leaders. And the authors were Bob Kaiser, Rin Sherman, and Robert Hogan, Bob Hogan, right? And so this is talking about how truly versatile leaders are surprisingly rare. The authors who have studied this trait for over 26 years found that fewer than 10% of the leaders can skillfully balance being forceful and supportive, strategic and operational. And the correlation between versatility and a variety of leadership outcomes, and we talked about employee engagement is a big deal, team agility, business unit productivity and overall effectiveness, the correlation between versatility and those outcomes have gotten stronger, meaning that they're more related. The good news is that the finding also says that versatility is a learned strength. So, and it really begins with understanding what your own tendencies and ways of thinking are, self-understanding. And then moving through, and it talks a little bit later about experiences. I think that saying this, you know, there's very little comfort in learning. If you're comfortable, you're probably not learning. If you're learning, then you're probably not very comfortable. So it's really learning how to prevent strengths from becoming a weakness through overuse. The authors write. So I wanted to get your reaction. I know I only gave it to you a few minutes beforehand. It popped in my inbox, and I'd read it and wanted to share it with you. But I know you haven't really had time to really, you know, go deep into this article, but maybe initial reactions and what your thoughts are on some of the topics that I just touched on.
Well, so based on your, what you've shared just now, that none of that surprises me. I think one, mm-hmm. of course, versatility has become, it's more important than ever, right? I mean, absolutely. Right. The role of the leader and especially a people manager has evolved so much. You know, sometimes, for example, if I'm explaining to one of my, family members who was really kind of in the thick of it in the workforce, you know, decades ago, they're like, wait, what do you do? You know, like, what is it that you're working on? Because the role has changed so much. So it's no shock to me that absolutely versatility is going to continue to be in such demand. And it also does not surprise me that it's rare, right? That someone having the ability to be both strategical, mm-hmm. Strategic and operational and operate in all these different kind of spaces. I mean, absolutely. That I think is going to be rare. What I love about what you just shared is that strengths-based, and I know this article, it sounds like, is not forwarding like a particular, like specific type of intervention necessarily. Maybe I'll go read it later. But mm-hmm. it sounds to me like the strengths-based sort of nugget that I heard there, what encourages me is all of that versatility, like the root of that has to be self-awareness. And here's the thing mm-hmm. that I would say about that is, you know, there is research to show that, you know, as leaders, as you climb the org chart, you would think maybe that, mm-hmm. oh, I have more experiences under my belt, and so I'm going to grow in self-awareness. But actually, what the mm-hmm. research shows is that as you grow on an org chart, you actually tend to get more unaware of self. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, one, you're not on the receiving end of as much performance feedback as you were when you were at the bottom of an org chart. And so this is why sometimes the most painful conversations I have with leaders are when I sit down to show them their, you know, qualitative, like open-ended comments, themes from what their employees say, yeah. because it's hard. It's, you're not on the receiving end. So you're disconnected mm-hmm. from those feedback loops that you weren't disconnected from when you were at the bottom. So of the org chart, right. The other thing that happens is over as you climb the ladder in your career and you become a leader, guess what? Status and power start playing such a huge role in how people choose to communicate with you. So you get told the truth statistically less and less and less the higher you climb, right? So the very best leaders who I think, to your point, are versatile and I would say also just agile in their kind of methodology are those that I think keep a healthy amount of skepticism, not, you know, like overly skeptical or self-deprecating, mm-hmm. you know, to a fault, but who stay skeptical and curious about how mm-hmm. other people experience them. Those mm-hmm. leaders who are self-aware use that self-awareness to launch into what we call self-expression and self-regulation. So self-expression would be the piece we talked about earlier where you're saying, you know, to your people, hey, I'm Jeff. I'm, you know, my tendencies are this, this, and this. So when tasks require this, I'm at my best. When they don't, I'm, you know, this is how I struggle. But then that self-awareness should hopefully pave the way for self-regulation. And so to me, that versatility is right there in self-regulation world. It's like, can I figure out in this moment, what is my team need of me? What is my organization need of me? What is the market telling me, right? Like whatever it is. And then how can I use what I know to be true about myself and my team to make a solid decision and not only make the decision, but the other part of that versatility is actually communicating, right? Because a lot of us make great decisions and then we botch it on the communication piece, you know? So I think it has to start with self-awareness if we are to have versatility. So I'm excited to read the article. My kind of line of thinking may be way off on kind of where it was going, but no. Those are some of my initial reactions.
I think it's a nice compliment to the article. I think whoever reads this article, it's called It Takes Versatility to Lead in a Volatile World. I'm going to include the link in the podcast description. One of the things that I really want folks to take away from what you just said is that self-awareness and self-regulation. As a leader, it takes a lot of guts to say that somebody else has a better bead on something than what your gut instinct is telling you. Or that maybe their version of what might be the right direction is actually better than yours. And what I encourage leaders, and this is the way it helped me get through those trying times, because I do, you know, I've been a leader for a long time and I've unfortunately been at the place where, you know, the king has no clothes effect, you know, where leaders don't always get that information that you say you want, but sometimes it's hard to receive nonetheless, right? But if you sit there and you take it in and you say, there's 10,000 answers to this problem, there's probably 1,000 good answers, there's probably 100 great answers, and there's probably 10 best answers. And the chances are that maybe the person on the other side of the room has one of the best or great answers, and maybe yours was just one of the good ones, right? Mm-hmm. And that way you don't have to say, hey, your instincts are terrible, you suck as a person, as a leader, you're all your senses are dull. No, you're actually quite talented. You got a lot of instinct. You got a lot, but there's a reason that it's people are around you. is because whenever you have good, they might have great. And allow them to be great around you to bring out those things, and then be humble enough to be able to set aside your pride, which isn't always easy in the moment, especially when you really, really think that you're right, and set that aside and try to give them the space to develop their idea. And then watch the room carefully as they do and see, are other people resonating with what they're saying? Are you picking up on nuggets that are building? And who knows? It might be that idea, or it might be an idea that ladders off of that idea, which is the winner at the end of the day. That's my recommendation. Self-awareness, self-regulation. I love that. That's worth the price of admission right there. I know this is free, but if you're paying like $10,000 to come to this, that would be in the worth the price of admission. Thank you so much. So I'd like you to, Leanne, I'd love you to give an opportunity to give one or two things that you could leave the group here as CEOs or senior business leaders who are running businesses, profit and loss organizations. If you could leave them with one or two things that they could do tomorrow that could help them grow their business with people, what would those one or two things be?
So first I would say, okay, two things. One is a short-term thing you could start tomorrow, and one is a longer-term thing. First short-term thing would be, if you could, starting tomorrow, dial up your praise and recognition efforts as it relates to individual talent and strength, regardless if you use the Clifton Strengths Assessment or any other tool out there. But that if you could use praise and recognition, you know, to deliver concrete, individualized praise and recognition, you know, you're going to see all sorts of positive things happen in your organization.
You said something there. Can I dial into this?
Yeah.
Right. Dial up praise and recognition as it relates to, that's, I think there's a key in there. So if you could say that again, as it relates to what?
Individual talent and strength. So Jeff, let me give you an example. It would be the difference between a leader saying to an employee, "Hey Jeff, thanks so much for your comments in that meeting. I really appreciated it," right? That is a great positive message coming from a leader. You could say that falls in a bucket of praise and recognition. But imagine if instead what I say is, "Jeff, you know, your ability to synthesize ideas, you know, as they're coming at us so quickly, your ability to make connections between what seems like disparate phenomena, or your ability to, you know, build momentum in that meeting, right, for us to launch into this initiative, we wouldn't be where we are without that." I mean, can you feel the difference between that? One of them is, I mean, they're both praise and recognition, right? But that's where I'm saying the communication piece comes in, is it's not just about the driving engagement and retention. It's going, how do we use strategic communication and the knowledge we have about the people on our team to show them that we see them as unique people and we value them as unique people. So that doesn't cost anything. It doesn't cost anything either, right? I mean, you don't have to spend a bunch of money if you're a leader on getting, you know. Now I will say, you know, a tool, for example, like Clifton Strengths could help you have some concrete language around it, but you don't need to use that specific tool. It's more about being dialed into the places of your employees, you know, like what do they do with ease, excellence, and enjoyment? And can you pick up on that and speak to it in a very concrete, individualized way? Saying thank you is so important, but I think saying thank you because here's the specific value that you bring is such a better approach. It means so much more. So that'd be the first thing.
Thank you. That is terrific. I love how you really tied it back to dialing up praise and recognition as it relates to individual talents and strengths. That's a huge pivot. So you had a second recommendation. So everybody perk yes. ears up, start to get your pens and paper out and start writing.
So the second one might cost you something a little bit more, but it's so important. And that is, I would say starting tomorrow, Think about how it is that you are equipping your people managers, whoever your leaders in your organization, with the skills of self-awareness and, you know, communication and driving engagement and retention. Because one of the, I think, the most groundbreaking studies that the Gallup organization did was they determined that the people manager accounts for 70% of the variance in employee engagement. So, you know, it's no surprise that you hear phrases like, well, people don't leave, you know, companies, they leave managers, because the manager is so responsible for that. So if you're a leader and you're wondering, how do we really improve engagement and retention? It is start with your managers, start with equipping your managers, self-awareness, communication, driving engagement and retention. And you're going to see so many positive outcomes, both for your manager engagement and then also for employee engagement in general. So those would be my two things. Again, I need more time. I need 3 more hours with you, Jeff.
That's okay. We'll have a part two if we want to do this. So what I'd like to tie this back into is that Harry Travis, is one of the former senior vice presidents over at Caremark. He is running a $180 billion line of business with over 110 million customers. And we just launched his podcast, right before the recording of this one. And so one of the things that really stood out to me, and for you, those of you guys who want to go back and listen to it, one of the things he said was he made it the year of the supervisor, because he knew that the supervisor was the key to unlock customer experience. He had 110 million customers to keep satisfied. That's only one third of the United States population, by the way, right? And so he had to keep those people satisfied. So he made it, you're the supervisor. And what you said is exactly that. Is like, I love what you said about how you equip with self-awareness, communication, engagement, and retention. Those are the building blocks that if you teach them how to do that, if you engage somebody, you know, in this case, I'm sure Leanne would love to be able to help you out with it. But even if it's not Leanne, if she's too busy because of this podcast, if you get somebody who can help you understand what those concepts are and be able to communicate and make the supervisors capable in those areas, you will have a virtuous hiring cycle, a virtuous cycle where engagement goes up, profits go up, hiring ability goes up, retention goes down, or retention goes up, attrition goes down, and you will be in a much better place than you've ever imagined yourself as a CEO. So, and then we can talk about your role as the chief leadership officer, which is the title of a book from another guest that we're going to be talking to, Kevin McCarthy. So we have a lot of cross pollination in these things. So Leanne, I think that you were the connector. You're kind of like the connector between all of these different podcasts. So I want to say thank you so much for being on the show. It was a true pleasure to have you. You were amazing. I can't wait for people to listen. If you didn't hear all the stuff, go back and maybe you had it on 1.75, because I was listening to all my podcasts at 1.75. You probably want to slow it down to 1.25. Take notes and start executing all of these ideas that Leanne just gave you. Thank you so much for your time, Leanne, and really appreciate you being a guest on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been the highlight of my week, Jeff.
Thank you all for listening to Growing Your Business with People. Growing Your Business with People is a podcast dedicated to CEOs and business leaders who want to get their MBA in people.